Well, good afternoon. This is Shelley Fishman sitting in for Bill Buckmaster. And Bill Buckmaster is on the way to concluding his tour of Atlantic Ocean Islands. He's in England. So he's kind of enjoying actually pretty good weather there, he says, and he and Anne are having a great time, getting ready to come home. So we're going to spend the entire hour today with two folks. Morgan Abraham led the effort against Prop 123, and Morgan is, I'm going to say this in a very fond kind of way, Morgan is very young. Morgan is the kind of guy that, you know, we're all going to be working for someday. He's just kind of done everything right in terms of building the foundations of a career and a perspective and the things that you do to have an impact. So we're happy to have him here. We also have David Safier here. And David is a blogger for the Tucson Weekly and a former teacher in Portland, taught English. We have had a little bit of discussion about the balance between tradition and grammar and rules and living language, but we're not going to bore you with that today. And I forgot last week to shout out our engineer and producer, Ray Allen, who did a great job with me as an amateur last week, you know, pointing and waving his hands and saying, no, you got to go to break. You got to do a commercial. You got to do this. By the way, we have a caller. Why aren't you looking at the screen? And so this week he has told me to behave myself, and I will. But it's Tuesday, and if it's Tuesday and we have to look at the stock market and what's going on, normally, you know, Monday giveth, Tuesday taketh away. Well, yesterday was kind of neutral, and today we're up about 220 points. So one of the things we can look forward to, I think, for the rest of the week is a pretty good economic report. But just before we get started, I'd like to just review a real quick article that I'm seeing in Yahoo Finance, because it's very important to, and we've talked about this, and Bill and I have discussed this here on this show several times, how do you get rich? You know, how do people who are successful, who didn't start with a $1 million gift from their dad, how do you get rich? How do you build the kind of portfolio that lets you get to your middle 60s or maybe early 70s and say, well, I don't have to work anymore. I've done what I need to do, and the kids are going to be okay. And now, you know, we can pick up and go explore the Atlantic Ocean Isles for weeks at a time. And what this article says very clearly is, according to a new study from the Bank of America's U.S. Trust, 77% of the firm's clients rose from middle class and poorer backgrounds to become what they call high net worth individuals. And they did it by buying and holding. They did it by being patient. They did it by ignoring the, you know, twin gremlins of greed and fear, by making intelligent investment decisions and sticking with those decisions, even when the market in the moment was giving them negative signs, or not grabbing at straws when the market was perhaps giving positive signs that said, here, buy this .com. So really good article available online through Yahoo Finance. Really, the way to build wealth is to build it slowly, build it carefully, and build it patiently. And that's my economic report for the day. And so now we get to education. So welcome to David and welcome to Morgan. Morgan, I am going to start with you because you have had arguably a disappointing week.
A little bit of a disappointment.
Yeah. You were running the No on Prop 123 campaign, and even though you won in Pima County and you won in Maricopa County, the total around the state wasn't enough to defeat this proposition.
Yeah. We actually won on Election Day in Maricopa County. We won statewide on Election Day. But the outlier counties didn't go our way, and then we actually lost Maricopa County total vote because 75% of the votes were early. So, yeah, I mean, Pima County, 55-45, 65% on Election Day was really strong numbers, and I was proud of how many people kind of looked into the issue further and saw it for what it was, but we came up 10,000 votes short or so.
Right. So we're going to talk about some stuff today that's probably, you know, a little bit political and certainly somewhat controversial. So I'm going to remind the audience that the hotline is open. The number is 790-2040. Call in with questions. Call in to join the discussion, and we'll try to take as many questions as we can. So why, Morgan, were you so enraged, might be the
it's
right
word.
Emotionally involved at your young age, with defeating a proposition that was, you could argue, kind of got us out of a hole.
It did get us out of a hole, but it also dug another hole right next door that we have to go into now. So in my opinion, and a lot of people's opinion, it did not make the situation worse or better by any means. And so when we looked at Prop 123, when I looked at Prop 123 early on, I'm a numbers guy. I was an engineer in college. I do investments for a living now, so I love my numbers. And when you just look at the raw numbers of this, you see very quickly that this is not a good deal. We are using money that already belongs to education to pay for the legislatures and the governor's unwillingness to fund education. We also had a judgment from the court, and we also were allowing extra triggers to go into our Constitution to limit how much we can fund education forever. So all three of those things really just didn't sit right. And on top of that, you hit it. I'm a young guy. You know, I plan to have kids who will attend public school. And so it's basically my kids that are going to be going to school in 10 years from now that are going to be the ones that are getting shortchanged from this Prop 123 deal. So it hit home just being a young guy and kind of seeing how politicians have a tendency to kick the ball down the road. And then on top of that, you know, when you're an investment professional, when you're a numbers guy, it looked awful.
And how many of the politicians who have kind of convinced the majority of voters in the state that this was a good idea are going to be around in 10 years when the bill comes due?
Exactly. And that was the most frustrating thing. And I think Treasurer DeWitt couldn't hit on that so much. You know, by the time the bill comes due, all these legislators are going to be termed out. You know, our governor won't be around anymore. So it's frustrating because it's going to be a whole
new problem. Somebody else is going to have to solve this problem. Right. David, why is education important?
Why is education important? You're talking to a man who invests his entire adult life in education.
Okay, so you're not the right guy to ask.
It's phenomenally important, obviously. And by the way, before I go further, I want to give a great deal of congratulations to Morgan for running a terrific campaign. I have to say that most of my friends were on his side rather than my side. I was kind of the lone guy amongst the people I know. And I agree with all of them, except for one thing. We need the money now. And with the kinds of people we have in the legislature, running the legislature, I will call them scoundrels when it comes to education, because I think that is appropriate. We will never get things better. We got it a little better to the tune of $300 per student per year, assuming that it goes through, and Morgan may know more about lawsuits than I do. I'm not sure about that right now. But assuming it goes through, that will mean the possibility of a few thousand dollars more per year per teacher, which means we get more teachers in, we keep more teachers. It means more money for books, more money for computers, more money to deal with crumbling infrastructure, all those things. And what we need to do in the future, in the next 10 years, the next 2 years, is get rid of some of the scoundrels and ask every single candidate, that's everybody running for House and for Senate this year in the state, ask them, what specifically do you plan to do for education next year? Don't be general. What specifically? How much money do you propose we spend above and beyond what we're already spending? And if they don't come up with a good answer, vote the rascals out.
So you would put education very, very close to the top of the list of things that are important for this state government to be properly managing.
I would make this a one-issue year in terms of the election. I would make it the litmus test. And the reason is not just education. Remember, we're not just talking about K-12 education. We're talking about the universities, which have been savaged. We cut more from our universities in any state in the country in terms of percentage and in terms of amount over the last 8 years. If we're talking about schools, we're talking about children's services, all kinds of children's services. We're talking about caring about what happens to the entire infrastructure in the state rather than caring about cutting the budget to the bone and giving tax breaks to the people in this state who least need the tax breaks. And all of those are kind of dominoes after what do you think about education funding?
Well, Morgan, can't the private sector really do the job better?
Oh, man. No. I think, I mean, obviously, there's a big push to try to have the private sector do that. You know, there's going to be vouchers that probably come up in the next legislative session, and there is a push to kind of defund education as much as possible so the private sector can kind of take that over. And while that does work in other areas, I mean, there's been study after study after study that show it doesn't
work.
Not
in other areas of education,
other geographic areas of education. Yeah, it doesn't work anywhere in education. And so, yeah, I mean, you look at the numbers, you look at the studies. I mean, you know, vouchers don't work. You know, private sector kind of taking over for public education doesn't work. And it's a scary thought to know that that's kind of the direction our state's headed in.
Well, let's peel that onion back a little bit. When you say vouchers don't work, what do you mean? They do what they're supposed to do, which is allow a kid to go from one school to another. Is that not
sure.
right?
Sure. So I think when you're looking at, first of all, work. I mean, I think the object with vouchers is to get more students to kind of go to better performing schools, and then in theory they will be better performing students.
Exactly.
But what the numbers show, and you look at study after study after study, is the only people that really use the vouchers are people that would have already gone to private school in the first place. You never really have students that were going to an underperforming school that end up using the voucher to go to a better performing school. And so that's what you want. You want these kids getting better educated, and obviously some people feel that means sending them to better schools, but vouchers don't accomplish that.
You know, when we look at vouchers, and I agree with everything that Morgan says about this, the studies show that vouchers at private schools aren't doing people any good. Specifically, private schools have the same kind of achievement rate for similar students as public schools and as charter schools. There's almost not a dime's worth of difference between them. And as Morgan says, these things are going to be used by upper middle class to wealthy families. They're not large enough to help the poorer students go to the schools that we always think of as private schools.
So we're going to take a break, and we're going to continue this discussion about the private sector running schools. We're going to continue this discussion about how to maybe fix or approach the problems that we're having in education here in Arizona and around the country. I'm proud to be in the studio with Morgan Abraham and David Safir. We're talking about education on the Bill Buckmaster Show. I remind everybody that this portion of the Buckmaster Show is presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, just 3 hours east of Tucson. Visit them on southwestnewmexico.org. And remember, this weekend is their big Blues and Bikes Festival. So this is a great weekend to get away to New Mexico. We'll be right back.
The opinions voiced in this program segment are for general information only and are not necessarily those of LPL Financial or this station. Shelley Fishman, CFP, is an LPL Financial Planner. Shelley can be reached at 520-940-0884 or at his website, shelleyfishman.com. Securities offered through LPL Financial. Member FINRA, SIPC.
Keep your family and pets safe from bee stings. Call the professional pest control team at 5-Star. We give you options in dealing with this situation. We can remove them with our special equipment or send them to bee heaven. Call the professional pest team at 886-0045 or visit 5-star-termite.com.
We're 5-Star Pest Control. We know what bugs you.
This is Bill Buckmaster with some exciting news. You could win a $1,000 or a $500 travel voucher to one of 16 nonstop destinations from Tucson International Airport in the Travel Smart with TUS contest. Register for free through Tucson International Airport's Facebook or Twitter pages, or go to the website TravelSmartTUS.com. Good luck. Travel smart and fly Tucson. It's the way to go. Business owners and managers upgrade your workforce through training customized to meet your needs. Pima Community College offers affordable, specialized training for companies large and small. Instruction is delivered how, when, and where you want it, whether online, at your business, or a customized combination. Pima Community College instructors make training relevant with a focus on today's real-world business needs and measurable success. Learn more at 206-6593, 206-6593.
What if you could see tomorrow? Biosphere 2. Find out why visitors journey here from all over to explore future life on our planet. Guided tours take you inside and behind the scenes of this fascinating 21st century research experiment. Now, experience our new What If interactive event series every Saturday at this must-see wonder of the world. At Biosphere 2, you will see tomorrow.
The Southern Arizona News Examiner, reporting from a different perspective. We have an entire section devoted to the Old West and its heritage. Contributors include Wyatt Earp historian Scott Dyke and Hiking Apacheria's Jerry Egan. We also look back at Old West newspapers and feature a column, This Day in Old West History. It is Old West News from a different perspective. The Southern Arizona News Examiner. Free subscriptions at soaznewsx.com.
Viro Mori is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. And now at Viro Amore's lovely new location within the remodeled Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, Viro Amore is proud to announce an expanded menu and bar offerings with 16 microbrews on tap and 14 keg wines, along with two separate cooler rooms to keep the beverages at just the right temperature. Viro Amore, Plaza Palomino, and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Viro Amore on the web at viroamore.com.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
And we're back. Shelley Fishman sitting in for Bill Buckmaster, vacationing in the Atlantic Ocean island community of Great Britain. Let's call it Great Britain, UK, whatever. He and his wife are having a great time. And I am, too, because I'm here in studio with two really great experts on education. David Safir and Morgan Abraham, and we're talking about why education, and so far we've kind of stuck to elementary and K through 12 education, but why it's important, why do we care, why is it so important for, let's go with economic prosperity in this state, for this state to do well with its kids. And we started getting into that, who are we competing with, David?
We're competing with every other state in the country, and we're competing internationally, obviously. And a while back up at ASU in the economics department, they did a study of achievement of kids in Arizona. And they said kids in Arizona do pretty close to similar kids all over the country, just a little bit lower in terms of the national test scores. In other words, we are hurt, and I would say by the lack of funding, because we've got excellent teachers and excellent curriculum and things like that. We've got the things we need, but because of the funding, our kids are hurt just a bit. And as you know, a slight advantage in competition is a great advantage, and it brings more industry if you have better educated kids, and it brings more people who want to live here if there are better schools. So a small advantage or a small disadvantage is huge.
So we don't need large gaps. Small gaps count.
Oh, absolutely.
They matter a lot. So just remind everybody that if you'd like to participate in this conversation, 790-2040, give us a call and we'll take your question or get you into the discussion. Morgan, you went to public schools in Phoenix, correct?
I did.
You're a native Arizonan. Somebody
has
to be.
That's correct.
Okay. And did you get a rotten education?
I thought I got a decent education. I was pretty happy with what I got.
So was that because the school gave you a great education, or because there was something about you and your upbringing and your family and your environment that promoted it, or is that not really an and or question?
It might be a little bit of both. I mean, full disclosure, I grew up in a household where my mom was a teacher. You know, she still is
that
a teacher.
It
certainly does count. So, you know, very early on, you know, we were working on books to kind of, you know, learn math, mm-hmm. or, you know, any free time we ever had was always kind of dedicated towards education. So once I started kindergarten and elementary school and middle school, I was already ahead of the game, and it caused us to kind of go through that path. And once you're on that path, you tend to stay on that path. So I attribute a lot of, you know, my education and my ability to kind of move on to college to my parents and kind of the upbringing I had. Absolutely.
You know, okay, we have a caller. Go ahead, Dave.
Okay, there's a misnomer. There's been a great deal of push by certain people to demonize public schools and talk about how bad they are. But when you talk about, well, did you get a good education, Morgan? Does anybody think that kids who go to the Catalina Foothills District don't get a good education? I think everyone would say they did. Those are public schools. Does anyone think that people who go to university high school don't get a good education? Everybody will say they will, and yet people will take cherry pick the schools which are called the failing schools, the dropout mm-hmm. factories, and say that speaks for everything. No, it speaks for something about our society, our income and social inequality, and less about the quality of our schools.
A caller, Dan, is on the phone. Dan, thanks for the call. You have a question or something you'd like to discuss?
If we had our kids better educated, do you think that would solve the problem of all the foreign workers coming in and taking over American jobs from working Americans?
Well, first of all, thank you for the question, Dan. And I'm going to ask our panel of experts to deal with that. But there's an assumption in the question, and that assumption has to do with our foreign workers coming in and taking our jobs. First of all, clearly we're exporting a bunch of the jobs that we need to export because of the global economy. But let me broaden the question a little bit. Are our schools being somehow affected by the large number of immigrants in our population, and are we catering to that population so greatly that it's maybe affecting the Native American, but the born in America population?
Well, those are two fairly distinct questions. Yeah. The first one that he asked about the immigrants flooding in and taking our jobs, if immigrants are taking low-paying jobs, that's not a matter of education.
Right,
that's
right.
Something else. If highly educated immigrants are coming in and taking our jobs, that's a completely different ball of wax, because sometimes they're being given those jobs because they will work for less, and people are bringing them in on the HB1 visas, I think.
Yeah, there's also, you know, there's a lot of jobs out there that require highly skilled, very specifically skilled individuals, and those jobs are not being filled by Americans because they don't have the skills to fill them. So that kind of becomes a little bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you're looking for software developers and there's not enough software developers, and they are available from universities, say, in the Far East, shouldn't we be taking those people in to promote our business, or should we not? Or should we really be focused more on making sure that our students in American schools are getting that kind of education?
Well, I think what the caller was also wanting to touch on, and this might not be the direction he was going in, but I'll go there. Talking about education versus the quality of jobs. I mean, he mentioned farm workers, and, you know, we're starting to see so many industries, whether it's, you know, Safeway or McDonald's mm-hmm. or anywhere like that, where computers and robots are starting to take over, and, you know, farm workers are that as well. And so that's the importance of education. You know, we're going into an economy where if you don't use your brain for a living, you're not going to have a job in 20 or 30 years. years. And so that's really important to realize, and that's why we need to be investing in our education system and our college system, because there's not going to be very many jobs where you're actually working going forward, because it's just getting too cheap to have a computer do it.
And I want to jump in on something you said, Shelley, because sure. I think once again, just like failing schools, that's another misnomer. I've read in any number of studies that there are more high-tech people graduating from American universities than we have jobs to take them. We have by like 15% more people graduating than we have jobs, and yet the jobs, which have a fairly short shelf life, high-tech jobs, mm-hmm. because it changes so much, are being paid reasonably low wages. And so it behooves people in the high-tech industry to say, we don't have enough people. We need these H-1B visas to bring in foreign workers who are willing to work at two-thirds of what an American would work at. If we paid people a decent wage, you would find that in those jobs, there would be plenty of people to fill them.
We're getting close to break at the bottom of the hour, but we do have another caller on. Doug is on the line. Doug, real quick, do you have a question?
Yeah, I appreciate Morgan and David being on. You know, the one thing David said, though, that confused me, you talked about, how we are a little less than the national average in terms of our test scores and results, but we always talk about being 49th in the country as far as funding. And so then you talked about Catalina Foothills being a great school and University High being a great school, and that kind of confuses me. Which are we? Are we schools that need more funding because we're not doing well, or are we doing well in spite of the funding?
Doug, that's a great question. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to opt for the producer who's kind of giving me a sign that says we need to cut for break. Let's take a break. Let's take that question as soon as we get back. I think that'd be a great place to kind of kick off. Remind everybody this portion of the Buckmaster Show is presented by Green Things, the place for all things green in Tucson. Green Things has all your plants, pottery, and gardening supplies on a beautiful 13-acre location on East River Road, just west of the intersection of Dodge and River. GreenThingsArizona.com, and we'll be right back.
The Regional Transportation Authority is funding new sidewalks, pedestrian crossings, and bike lanes across the region to enhance our regional mobility and safety. The 20-year plan also includes roadway improvement projects and transit service enhancements to get you where you want to go. The RTA continues to deliver its promise to you to make our region a better place to live, work, and play. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. Learn more at rtamobility.com. If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques. It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com. As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Every year, eager travelers journey to Europe to experience the Yuletide season at its very best. With the glittering backdrop of winter white hilltops and extravagantly decorated cities, get swept up in the enchantment that's in the air. Let's not forget the most magical part of all, Europe's famous Christmas markets, renowned for their festive atmosphere, great food and drink, and handcrafted gifts. Experience the magic of the holidays aboard an Ama Waterways river cruise. Call Bon Voyage Travel to plan your Christmas market cruise and save up to 40%. Bon Voyage Travel, 797-1110.
Are you a landlord by choice or by force? Experiencing a job transfer and don't know what to do with your current house? Want to move but can't sell your current house? Hello, my name is Ken Adams, co-owner of Rincon Ventures Property Management. Rincon Ventures has a fully automated accounting process, electronic payments, and 24-hour access to your accounts. With some of the lowest rates in Tucson, Rincon Ventures has grown rapidly in this down economy. Let us show you why. Give us a call at 881-2258 right now and experience the difference. Rincon Ventures, where service is a fact, not another empty promise. 881-2258.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com.
And we're back. Shelley Fishman sitting in for Bill Buckmaster, who is still on vacation. And I'm here with David Safir and with Morgan Abraham. We're talking about education in Arizona. And just before the break, Doug called in with a question. Let me see if I can summarize it. What he was picking up on is a point that David made earlier, which is that the difference in outcomes between a high-level performing states and low-level performing states is minimal. The difference in funding is large. And if funding, therefore, is not going to be the main influencer of outcomes, how do you kind of bridge that gap?
Well, this is a phenomenally complicated subject, and Doug was asking an extremely good question that was conflating all kinds of issues. For instance, the difference between Arizona achievement, the kids here, and the kids in Massachusetts. Massachusetts ranks as one of the fifth highest countries, if it were a country, mm-hmm. comparatively, based on the international tests, while Arizona would be down with, I don't know, Lithuania or wherever it happens to be. So that becomes very complicated. But within Arizona, let's take Catalina Foothills. Catalina Foothills, virtually every kid comes from reasonably high income, high educated families. They have all the resources coming into the schools. Catalina Foothills passes its bond measures. Catalina Foothills gets people giving the tax credits. Catalina Foothills can have bake sales and auctions and things like that. And they have brand new buildings, brand new facilities. They have a phenomenally higher amount of resources per student than a place like Tucson. And when you look at how funding affects education, it affects the poorest kids most. Always. This is all over the world. This isn't just here. The poorest kids are the ones who are the most affected because they're the ones who need more because for any number of economic and social reasons, they get less of the things that give them advantages in schools.
I think I might disagree a little bit. I definitely agree with the premise of what you're saying. I think to Doug's question, though, I mean, I think right now what we're focused on is you throwing money at the situation in some cases makes it better, in some cases doesn't. But when I got this question when I was doing the Prop 123 stuff, I'd always say we have a clear problem with how much we pay teachers. They are fleeing this state. And, you know, if you look at, you know, how much you spend on teachers from a market standpoint, we are clearly under market level. There's no question that a teacher can go to any other state.
Regardless of the capability of the kids and their willingness to learn and their preparation for learning,
sure.
If you don't have teachers to teach them,
As long as we are not paying teachers enough and they are going to other states and we have vacancies, every school district in the state, as long as we have vacancies, that means we are not paying teachers enough and that means we are not spending enough on education. I'm not saying I want to throw a ton of money at the problem. I'm just saying let's get our teacher salary level to a point where we can compete with other states so we don't worry about losing those teachers. So that way we can kind of start to build from there.
Okay. Fair. Doug, I hope we answered your question or got close to an answer. I'd like to talk about not K through 12, but kind of move this a little bit higher in the education realm to our community colleges and technical training and post high school training. How are we doing there? I mean, we know that we've just defunded. I mean, there's our community colleges here in the state, but it seems to me that one way into a higher education is through the community college system. And so my question of you guys is, how are we doing there and what do we need to do better?
Yeah, well, I think, I mean, there's no question the numbers show. I mean, we in the U.S., we have great universities, you know, compared to the rest of the countries. I mean, that's kind of where our power is in our university education system. I mean, we have students from all over the world come to study in the U.S. Arizona, I mean, we have three great institutions. I mean, all of them are fairly well-priced. We have a great community college system. I think that there's a lot of fear with a lot of people about the trend of the burden of the price of higher ed. You know, historically, it was about 75% paid by the state, 25% paid by tuition, and that's flipped. And almost in the past 15 years, that's flipped. And that's really concerning because now you have a new generation, my generation, of college-graduated kids, you know, coming out of the schools, you know, the future of the economy, that have so much debt they can't do anything else. And so that I think, is the biggest concern. But I think overall, the state of our university systems in Arizona and countrywide is we're doing pretty well.
What other country in the industrialized world charges what we do for higher education?
In the industrialized world, none that I know of.
Yeah, and to be honest, we didn't either. Now, we were talking about Morgan being a young man, and you very kindly didn't mention where I am on the scale, but we can assume that if I taught for 33 years, I'm a little bit older than Morgan, and I went to the University of California system back in the mid-60s, early 70s. And when I went to school, it was like $35 a semester, maybe $50 a semester, and our community colleges, which were called city colleges, were absolutely free, no tuition whatever. This meant that anybody who had a glimmering thinking that they might be able to make it, it wasn't going to be an economic burden on them. And I left with $1,000 in debt.
And in the 50s and 60s, the economy in the country was tanking?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. So so it is actually possible to provide public education at post-secondary levels and do it in a way that can be affordable for the students.
Absolutely.
Well, I think there's two big things coming out when you land. I was the student body president at U of A, so I got to deal with this tuition issue pretty firsthand. But one, you have the lack of investment from the state. But I think another big issue that I wish got talked about more is this arms race that these universities are basically going for to try to have cooler things than the next university, like the rec center or, you know, things that don't really educate the student but kind of is an attraction as students go to there. And if you look at the actual breakdown of tuition and fees, these new, I'll call it arms race fees, are contributing a significant portion of what students pay.
As an in-state university student at U of A, what was your per credit cost?
Man, per credit. So my tuition was probably right around $6,500 for the semester. So that would probably take about 12 to 15 credits per semester. So, I mean, the per credit cost we never really looked at, because as long as you're taking more than 9 units, you're paying the base level of tuition, no matter what.
So $40, $50 a credit.
And more than that.
More than that.
Yes, significantly more than
that. So when I entered City College in 1962, City College in New York was free. And I had a Regents scholarship, so they were paying for books. They didn't pay my subway fare, but that was only 15 cents. So it was free. I had applied to the University of California. I was accepted to UCLA, but it was $500 a semester if you were a non-state resident, and we couldn't afford that. So I went to City College. I flunked out after a year. I was 16 years old. I was too young to be in college. But it is doable.
Absolutely.
It is absolutely doable. By the way, the city university system in New York, New York City has some of the best schools had at the time, some of the best schools in the country, both law school, medical school, engineering school at City College, and UCLA and the city schools in California, again, among the top schools in the country. Now, they're not Ivy League schools, but you got a really great education at those schools, and if you were a resident, they were virtually free.
Shelley, you're right. It's not only doable, but we can do it now if we change the paradigm that we've developed, the paradigm being that the government is your enemy, and instead start thinking that there's some services that the government should provide as the great leveler that allows everyone to get the best possible education, amongst other things. And we've lost, unfortunately, that sense in the K-12 area in higher education, not just in Arizona, but around the country. And it's very, very sad, and it's something that I hope gets reversed.
I completely agree with that. I think it's, right now we obviously fund education primarily from the state revenue. That's kind of where the majority of the cuts are. So we have a long way to go before Arizona, university tuition is free in this state. I mean,
but it's not just Arizona. It's the entire country. And again, let's forget about Brown and Harvard and Yale and Columbia and
Private schools. Those would be just public schools.
But public schools, you get out of public school, unless your parents can afford it, you get out with a pile of debt.
Oh yeah.
And that is. That's hard to look at now.
Well, it also has more bigger consequences. I mean, I'm in real estate, and so you have the realtors that are very upset about this because my generation can't afford housing, which is having a big ripple effect on the economy. You have the car dealers that are upset about this because they can't buy cars. I mean, there's bigger implications to having this much debt for one generation than just the fact that we have the debt. I mean, this is impacting our economy in a very big way.
That's a great point. You never hear that stated. The business community in some ways is rallying around education and the need for that funding. They don't want to pay for it, but they realize a need for the very reason you're saying, that we need to have an educated populace and we need to have a debt-free populace. So if you don't have debt, you can spend money. If you have debt, you can't spend the money.
Right. And if you're spending money and earning a living, you're paying taxes. And
it's great for the economy.
And it's great for the economy. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll do the concluding segment.
Business owners and managers upgrade your workforce through training customized to meet your needs. Pima Community College offers affordable, specialized training for companies large and small. Instruction is delivered how, when, and where you want it, whether online, at your business, or a customized combination. Pima Community College instructors make training relevant with a focus on today's real-world business needs and measurable success. Learn more at 206-6593, 206-6593.
What if you could see tomorrow? Biosphere 2. Find out why visitors journey here from all over to explore future life on our planet. Guided tours take you inside and behind the scenes of this fascinating 21st century research experiment. Now, experience our new What If interactive event series every Saturday at this must-see wonder of the world. At Biosphere 2, you will see tomorrow.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Your Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona is setting the standard for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. Being accredited with BBB means that your business holds the same high standards and consumers can count on you to keep your word. Hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans use our website every month. Make sure they find your business. Call us today to discuss the many benefits of BBB accreditation at 888-6161 or go to our website at bbb.org/Tucson.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100. This year, the Regional Transportation Authority celebrates 10 years of delivering projects across Pima County. More than 730 multimodal projects help you reach your destinations. Thanks to our partners and the public for collaboration, participation, and support of the RTA plan. By delivering both mobility and economic benefits to our communities, the RTA truly is making a difference. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Next time you book a flight, type in TUS. Travel smart and fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
And we're back. This is Shelley Fishman sitting in for Bill Buckmaster, talking about education with David Safir and Morgan Abraham here in studio. Again, if you have a question or want to join the discussion, 790-2040, and we'll try to take your question. So I'm going to ask this question, Morgan. What should be the purpose of a state university?
Yeah, well, I think a public state university, the primary purpose should be to educate the students and turn out degrees, basically. It's good for, I mean, obviously at a certain level, but it's good for our economy, and we have people kind of moving on and having degrees. It attracts businesses. Higher-end degrees obviously earn more money, which you can tax. I mean, I think that's the primary purpose for in-state public universities, is to just turn out degrees.
So you didn't say this, but am I hearing you say that the primary focus ought to be on undergraduate degrees?
I wouldn't necessarily. I mean, I think there's obviously a shift in what used to be, what the worth of an undergrad degree was 30 years ago now seems to be master's degrees and kind of a higher ed. I think post-secondary degrees are just as important as undergrad degrees when you're actually kind of adding value to society. In the 70s and 80s, a bachelor's degree got you in the door at certain places. That's no longer the case. Now, you know, you need an MBA. You need other
right.
types of degrees. And so I think you look at them both equally, but we're looking for degrees that benefit the society.
So doesn't a university become, and if all you have is state universities, I mean, we have some private colleges here in
not
the state,
many.
But not many and not very large. So if all you have is state universities, don't we depend upon those state universities to provide the academic community the seed resources for research and development and that kind of thing?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that a great university, and I think University of Arizona system qualifies as in the great-ish line. I don't know if it qualifies as great in that sense, but a great university has got to have research, has got to have top people in there. A community benefits phenomenally. You know, we have all these incredible things that are going on in the university that spill over into the private sector constantly, in pharmaceutical and in space type exploration and all kinds of things like this that are, it's a generator of income. I mean, you said you were worked in Silicon Valley. Would
right.
Silicon Valley exist without Stanford?
That's very
no,
true.
No.
Okay, so
but Stanford's a private college.
I know,
it's a private
but,
university.
But would Tucson, some of its better possibilities in terms of the highest wage jobs and the highest education jobs, exist without a university with the best thinkers in the world working there and researching?
And even the non-private colleges, I mean, a perfect example is UT Austin, right?
Right.
I mean, the city of Austin is booming tech-wise, mm-hmm. job-wise, economy-wise, and that is 100% because of the University of Texas, Austin.
So as in most things, the answer is setting the right balance.
I would
Absolutely.
Agree.
And
yeah.
to set the right balance, you don't play one off against the other. You don't throw a piece of meat in the middle of a bunch of hungry dogs and say, go at it, guys. You say, we need our research. We need to fund that. We need our graduate education. We need to fund that. We need our undergraduate education. We need to fund that. And we need to make sure that kids who don't have all the advantages can dare to go to university without saddling themselves with $50,000, $60,000, $100,000 in debt.
Okay, so If you can't get into the U of A, if you don't have the requisite the requirements to get into the U of A, but you want to approach higher education through the community schools through the schools that are either technical in their scope or community colleges. Does that help? I mean, why would anybody start off at U of A if they could start off at Pima Community College and get those credits kind of transferred and then complete their bachelor's degree at the U of A or ASU?
It's a great question. It's certainly a lot less expensive to start off at Pima Community, significantly. Right. There are definitely some degrees that kind of do force you to take specific classes at the U of A. But, you know, for the average, you know, American kind of middle income individual, it makes complete sense to start at Pima Community College instead of going right into U of A. On top of that, I think you asked another question in there. One of the things that I think we're trying to push towards, and I know, you know, I have a lot of critique of the Regents, but one of the things I think they're starting to get right is you're starting to see more aspects of education work together. So the Regents, being the ones who oversee the universities in the state, are working with the Department of Education now and the Superintendent of Public mm-hmm. Instruction. That what they're trying to accomplish is if you graduate from a, you know, public school, K-12, you should have enough qualification to get into a public university. And in the past, you've seen a huge disparity amongst kids that graduated from 12th grade at a public school and couldn't get into the U of A, couldn't fulfill the math requirements.
Ready.
And so we're starting to see that gap shrink. There's still a significant gap there, but it's one kind of nice area that I think Arizona's really been working on.
So interesting that you say that Arizona's working on it. It seems to me that the people running the community college system ought to be working very, very closely with the people running the school districts, the K-12 school districts, to make sure that they understand each other's needs in terms of where are the gaps, what needs to be filled, what needs to be done to make sure that the high schools and junior high schools are preparing kids for the requirements of being a college student, and vice versa, that the high schools are also, or that the community colleges are also letting the schools know, the K-12 schools know where the market is, what kind of education is going to be required, how to prepare, and those kinds of things.
Well, one of the recent board members, recently elected board members of Pima Community College, is a guy named Mark Hanna, who talked to before he was elected. And he used to work at Catalina High School. And his job was at Catalina High School to prepare kids for the college environment. He worked with these kids. He counseled them and moved them towards what they needed, and also worked with Pima Community College to make room for these kids. And he told me more recently that these functions, partially because of the dysfunction at Pima Community College, but also because of funding, have been cut back. And absolutely, there should be a constant flow back and forth between the community colleges and the high schools, and especially the high schools where the kids don't have the push from the parents, who don't even have the knowledge to know how to do this. It's absolutely essential, and it's another area where I'm afraid to say it takes money, it takes personnel.
Well, that seems to be a central theme in this discussion, but more in terms of your emphasis. And I think what we hear on the flip side of that is we need more efficiency, that money doesn't buy quality education, that there are other things that need to be done in terms of teacher training, in terms of motivating and rewarding top teachers. I don't even want to get into the whole union, teacher union thing. But is money the answer? That's kind of where we began this session. You know, is money the answer?
If I can end with an analogy, money isn't the answer to good nutrition. But if there's not enough money to feed kids good food, their nutrition suffers. Money isn't the answer to education, but if there's not enough money for good nutritional education, it doesn't work, and there simply isn't enough in Arizona. End of story. There's no discussion about that. It's just an absolute fact.
There's not enough money in Arizona, or there's not enough money in the Arizona school system?
School system. Not Arizona, there is money.
Sure.
But it's not tapped.
And I think, I mean, if you want to kind of explore the issue more, the one thing that's staggering to me is I want to say something like little under 50% of teachers will no longer be in the profession after 5 years. And the number one reason why is because of money. They don't get paid enough. So if that is not a good thing to have in our state. It's not good for the students. It's not good for our economy. It's not good. So, you know, at the very least, if you just want to keep teachers around, it takes money.
Right. Also, if the classroom environment is one that is hostile to teaching, no amount of money can make that worthwhile, can make that feel rewarding.
Yeah.
And your mother's a teacher.
She's been doing it forever. I mean, I see her struggle and struggle and struggle. And that was the last thing I was going to say on your point. I mean, I don't think teachers need much more motivation to continue teaching. I mean, they went into this profession where they know what their maximum pay is going to be. They love what they do and they're good at what they do. So we don't need to reward them. We just need to try to encourage them to stick around. And it'll take a little bit more money. But the younger teachers, if you make it past 10 years, you're going to stick around. But these young teachers with so much potential, they're the ones fleeing and they're the ones we need.
Morgan Abraham, thank you very much. David, any final thoughts before we end this hour?
What Morgan said, absolutely, 100%. He's right. He's got a mother who's been there. I've been there. And that's what it is about teaching. People love teaching, but you've got to allow them to take care of their families too. Enough money to do that.
Thank you so much, David Safier. This is Shelley Fishman sitting in for Bill Buckmaster. And again, another shout out to Ray Allen, our engineer, who's doing a great job and making up for the things that I don't do every day and making it sound really professional. Thank you, Ray. Morgan Abraham, David Safier, thanks again. Okay. Wish we had another hour to keep this going. We don't. So next week, Bill will be back and he'll do his usual good job and we'll do the economic report. But for everybody now, thanks again. Have a great week and have a great afternoon.